What's it like for a scientist to live in a tropical rainforest out in the middle of nowhere? Writer Elizabeth Reut was curious, so she went to Panama's Barro Colorado Island, or BCI as it's known, and she wrote a book called The Tapir's Morning Bath. BCI's a small island, only 6 square miles, that was formed when the Panama Canal was carved out of the jungle. Over the years, BCI has become the most studied rainforest in the world.
It's moist rainforest. It's seasonal, a rainy season and a dry season, and the island is nothing but forest. It's steep ravines and ridges, and there's hardly any flat place at all, and the only habitations are the lab clearing that they've made on the northeast corner of the island, where there's a few dorms, a dining hall, and labs, and then all the rest is wonderful jungle.
Now, you went down there to study with the scientists who were there to study the species on the island and the ecology of the island. In a way, you were doing your own research project into the human population.
Right. I was studying the studiers.
Yeah. Tell me about some of them.
There was a woman from New Zealand who was studying the spider monkeys on the island, and she was interested in their behaviors and trying to figure out what kinds of things they did were sexual, because no one knew when monkeys are covert ovulators. You can't tell when they're in estrus. And so primatologists didn't know if behaviors they exhibited in the field were related to them being in estrus. So her job was to go around every day and collect fecal samples from 5 cycling adult females. And she would later analyze these samples for metabolites of female hormones.
What did you do? Did you tail along carrying the baggies?
I had my supply of Ziplocs, and once I learned to recognize a few of the females, which took me a long time, it was very difficult, she would assign me to a monkey, because the problem was the monkeys move so fast through the treetops, and we're just, you know, these bipedal scientists on the ground going down ravines and up hills and scrambling and holding onto vines and slipping in the mud, and the monkeys are gone. So she lost them a lot, and that was a problem and very frustrating for her.
It's a step up from following your dog with a pooper scooper, but there's some similarity, isn't there?
It doesn't smell as bad with a monkey, and it's rewarding because you've spent so much time watching the monkeys and following them, and then they finally defecate, and then the sample drops down, and it's like gold. And then you have this little battle to get to it before the dung beetles arrive, and they come within 2 minutes from really far away, and they, because it kind of splatters, you're probably not going to use all this, but the dung beetles actually collect the fecal matter sometimes before you can get to it. It's not like it's in one neat lump and you collect it. There's some scraping off of leaves to do.
the details of research that make you realize it's actually pretty hard work.
Yeah.
We should back up for a moment. You talk about this as though it was the most natural thing in the world, but I gather when you got to the island, in fact, it wasn't entirely clear that you were welcome there.
No, I was not immediately welcomed. When I got there, I met with a scientist and told them what I wanted to do, but they said to me, we live here too. We sleep here, we eat here, we have relationships here, and we're not so comfortable having you write about that. One researcher who was vehemently against being written about, I had heard that he was very bright and he was working on an interesting project, and it was sort of a challenge for me to win him over. And he came to me after giving me a very hard time. And he came to me and he said, it would really help your cause if you played Ultimate Frisbee with us. And he was a Frisbee fanatic. And the island, there's no flat place on the island, but people would take the boat off the island once or twice a week to this canal town of Gamboa, where there was a playing field. And there was a very competitive game of Ultimate Frisbee, all scientist Frisbee. And I said, okay. And I played Frisbee, and I think that helped a little bit. I got involved in that. And eventually, this person agreed to let me tag along in the field, and he was radio tracking bats, and his girlfriend was visiting him for a while, and she helped him radio track, and she had to leave after a while, and he needed to train someone to do it, and I raised my hand.
You ended up going with him.
Yeah.
Yeah, what he was doing was fascinating. He was tracking bats by gluing transmitters to their backs.
Right. First, he would hang a mist net in the woods to catch the bat.
What's a mist net?
It's a very fine nylon, it's fine mesh net. It's like a badminton net, basically, you know, 2 poles, and it hangs at, I don't know, 8 feet up or something. He was interested in small fruit-eating bats that make tents, and this behavior has evolved 3 times in the history of bats in their family tree, and he was trying to figure out why. So he would affix these transmitters on. They had a little raisin-sized transmitter with a 4-inch wire, and when the wire was in a vertical position, it made a certain noise, and then the sound changed when it was in horizontal, so he could tell
whether they were flying or nesting.
Yes, with his antenna and his receiver.
The tent would be folded leaf?
Yes.
The bat had done something to this to make it protective.
Modified it with its teeth and sometimes using its thumb claws. I think he videotaped a bat using its claws to modify the leaf.
Why would they do that?
That's the big question. Brett Weinstein, the researcher that we're talking about, theorized that they used these tents to limit their commuting costs, that looking for new fruit in the forest, it's more costly for a small bat to fly around in search of food than for a large bat.
In terms of the energy used.
Right. So to make a roost near the fruit source is a smart idea, but the fruit is temporal. It's here and then it's gone, and so it has to make a new roost. And it didn't want to make a roosting tent very near the fruit because there's other fruit-eating animals around it that might prey on the bat. So there are all these trade-offs, and he got very interested in trade-offs.
Trade-offs, in fact, led him in another direction entirely as the course of the research project went on. One of them is fascinating. It suggested patterns of human behavior, the trade-off between senescence, aging, and the development of cancer.
Yeah. Let me read you just a couple paragraphs here.
Okay.
Brett asked me one day, how do you make a complicated multicellular organism without tumorous growths? In a body with 10 trillion cells, he continued, there are 10 trillion opportunities for runaway cell lines to scrap the entire project. So how do you build a system, a fail-safe, to keep the renegades from overrunning the place? The renegades were cancer cells, and to Brett's way of thinking, evolution had already supplied vertebrates with just such a fail-safe, and true to form, it was a trade-off. Cancer and senescence are somatic opposites, Brett said. One is runaway cell growth, the other is retarded cell growth.
In other words, as I understand it, what Brett is theorizing, and he doesn't say that this is true, he just thinks that it's an interesting idea to pursue, we may age so that we don't give our bodies the opportunity to create cancerous cells.
Yeah, if it works out, he'll be a famous scientist, and it's really complicated.
One of the things that's interesting about going to watch scientists in action on a place like PCI is that they go with one project in mind, and maybe through interaction with others, they see more of their project than they might have.
PCI is really a crossroads. So many people from different disciplines end up here at one point or another, and you interact with them. And Brett got some of his ideas. He started thinking about trade-offs in the bats, and then he talked to a plant researcher there about trade-offs in plants and the chemicals that they make and the expense of making these chemicals to defend themselves and the benefits they get from it, and talking to another researcher about fig wasps and figs. And this sort of cross-pollination of ideas is so enriching and one of the reasons people continue to come back to BCI.
BCI is the Barro Colorado Island in Panama, the best-studied rainforest in the world. Elizabeth Royd's book is called The Tapir's Morning Bath.